24. One trick to play. As soon as the Merry Miner left the region, and then Jaina confirmed that the Jade Saber and the Millennium Falcon had gotten out as well, Jason breathed considerably easier. He pulled off his breather, trying not to spit all over his close-quartered companion, then pressed the pressure point, releasing the invasive cloaker. Despite all the seriousness of the situation around him, all the grief and all the loss, he couldn't help but be self-conscious as that skin-like covering peeled away from him, rolling down past his belly, sliding under his loose-fitting skirt, then lower down his bare legs and feet, leaving him feeling quite naked, and leaving him, as Danny likewise released her mask and cloaker, conscious of the fact that she was in a similar state, wearing no more than a tiny loose-fitting shift. Above that level of tension, Jason noted that his companion's shoulders bobbed with quiet sobs. "We're out now," he said to her softly, and then he looked at her, really looked at her, and nearly lost his breath at the beauty he saw there. In truth, Danny was a mess, with bruises on her face and her curly blonde hair matted and ragged. But Jason didn't see any of that as he looked hard, and for the first time into her green eyes, into the pain he saw there. Both the vulnerability and the inner strength, as he stared into her mind and her spirit, remembering that she and not Miko Reglia had been the one to put out the telepathic call, though she was not a Jedi Knight. She could be, Jason realized then and there, and a great one at that. He was conscious, too, of the press of their scantily clothed bodies together within the confines of the small stylish ship. "You're safe now," he said, his voice barely a whisper, and he worked his hand up from his side, taking care as to where it brushed, then brought his fingers gently against Danny's cheek. "Miko," the woman said quietly. Jason nodded that he understood about Miko and about the ordeal this woman had apparently suffered on that cold planet. He dared to bring his hand around to the back of her head, his fingers sliding into her thick shock of hair, and he pulled her close. Danny didn't resist. She buried her face in Jason's strong shoulder and allowed the tears to flow. As soon as the three ships came out of hyperspace, and still far from Dubrillion, Luke opened channels to the other two. Jaina piped it down to Jason and Danny in the stylish ship, and Han moved to open it up to the rest of his ship, until he noted that Anakin and Lando were already entering the bridge. And so it began, the analysis of what had just happened, the expressions of shock that this still unknown enemy had so thoroughly routed such a formidable New Republic fleet. Still unknown? A hush engulfed the other eight when an unfamiliar voice piped in, Danny Quee beginning a long and thorough explanation of this enemy they now faced, the Praetorite Vong, from the time they had breached the Galactic Rim to their journey to Belkaden to her experiences under their control. Only Luke interrupted her compelling story, just enough to explain to Danny the ultimate fate of Belkaden. The woman swallowed hard and seemed to swallow it away, going on with a determination that they could all hear in her voice and that Jason could see clearly in her eyes. He joined in when she got to the end of her tale, the escape, the rescue by Jason, the death of Miko Reglia. When the pair finished, there was near silence for a while, except that the people on the Falcon and the Merry Miner could hear Luke and Mara speaking quietly about something. "Care to let us in on the secret?" Leia asked. "We were talking about the creature Danny spoke of," Luke replied. "The Yamisk." Then, his voice lowered and thick with meaning, he added, "The war coordinator." "Yeah, that's what she called it," Han said dismissively, missing any understanding of the gravity of Luke's tone. "That's why they fought so well," Anakin blurted. "You think that Yamis creature was somehow binding our enemies together?" Leia asked. "I know that they fought too synchronously," Luke replied. "Too coordinated, and without any communication that we could hear, or even sense. The Yuuzhan Vong were always talking about being joined together by the war coordinator," Danny put in. You felt the power when we went down into the atmosphere, Luke added, and Mara beside him agreed. Absolutely, Leia replied.
I didn't, Han said. I just know that my instruments were a bit wacky.
I felt it, Jaina put in. I felt it a long way out from the planet, but down near the surface it was incredible, overwhelming. So that creature is what turned our enemies into such a tremendous force, Leia followed the reasoning. That creature brought them together into a singular fighting unit.
Like me, Jason and Jaina, in the belt, Anakin put in.
Then we have to destroy that creature, Luke reasoned.
You won't get near it without an army of soldiers, Danny said without hesitation. Even if you can get back down under the ice crust, you'd be battling hundreds of Yuuzhan Vong warriors.
In fact, Luke was entertaining that very thought. If he could take the ice borer stylish ship back down and somehow work his way to the great Yamask.
And the Yamask itself would stop you, Danny added. It's huge, and that energy you felt about the planet pales in comparison to what it can do up close.
Uncle Luke is a Jedi, Anakin came back, somewhat indignantly.
So was Miko Reglia, Danny replied, and the Yamask overwhelmed him repeatedly.
Jedi Master, Anakin retorted defiantly, but then Luke cut in, diffusing the tension and changing the subject.
Can we rally enough firepower in here to take out the whole planet? He asked,
and the hesitation in his voice was an accurate reflection of the trepidation in his thoughts. How many ships would they need, and how many would be destroyed before they ever came close to accomplishing the task?
That'd take half the fleet, Han reminded.
Or more, Leia added grimly.
We hardly hurt them today. And what will we be left with for defense at the core if we bring the fleet out here and lose?
The Praetorite Vong will walk across the galaxy, one system at a time, Danny added. And as she was the expert among them on their enemies, those words rang ominously indeed.
How else can we beat it? Luke asked in all seriousness. What can we do, here and now, to defeat the Yamask?
I've got some heat charges that would do some damage to that ice crust, Lando offered.
If we could even get them to the right places on the surface, past those gravity wells, Han said.
I don't think they'd do much good anyway, Danny put in. The Yamask is down deep, where the water is warmer from the volcanoes.
Too bad we couldn't just shut the volcanoes off and freeze the thing, Jason added.
Then came a short pause, and Luke started to break it by asking how much damage Rejuvenator had been able to inflict with her laser batteries, taking that line of questioning to the point with Danny and Jason to learn if they, since they were under that ice crust, had even felt the pounding. He was cut short, though, by a surprisingly animated Anakin.
We can, he said.
And when his father returned with a huh, he added,
we can shut the volcanoes off. Or at least we can freeze the water around them.
How are we going to do that? Han asked. It's already about as cold around that planet as it can be.
Almost, Anakin said slyly, but not quite.
Absolute zero? Luke asked.
How are we going to do that?
Evaporation, Anakin replied.
Huh? Han said again.
Nothing steals energy faster, Jason agreed, remembering the science lessons Anakin was recalling, lessons that he and Jaina, too, had been taught at the Jedi Academy.
If we can speed up the evaporation around the planet, we'll cool it down, Anakin said.
And how do we do that? Han asked skeptically.
You infuse the process with energy, Jaina explained, like the energy of sunlight drying up puddles.
Han snorted. If we can get that amount of energy out here, we can just use it to destroy the planet, he reasoned.
Unless we turn the Yamask's energy back in on the planet, Danny said suddenly.
And except for Han's increasingly predictable, huh? There came a few moments of dead silence, as the others all considered the logic of the notion.
Lando, Luke called.
Why are you asking me? The man came back.
When you were on Niklan, you did some serious energy reflection, Luke replied. a sly note edging into his voice, showing that he thought he might be onto something.
"You mean the sunlight?" Lando asked. "We did more hiding from it than turning it back, running behind the panels of the shield ships, and..."
He paused, and those on the Falcon's bridge with him saw his face brighten.
"Shield ships," he said evenly.
"I thought they were all destroyed," Danny said. She had heard the tales and had not seen the great ships in close orbit to Destrillion.
"Well, I had to build a few more," Lando replied, and his tone gave Luke the image of the man's always wry grin. "Couldn't lose the technology, after all."
"Get them out here as quickly as you can," Luke ordered. "There's mountains of mist around the planet already, from the pounding rejuvenator gave to the place. And if we turn right back after being so routed, we might catch our enemies by surprise, perhaps even with many of their fighters away from home, heading out to find the remnants of our fleet."
"You'd better bring back Kip and all the starfighters and gunships we can manage, too," he added, "just to help protect the shield ships while they move in close and do their work."
"Already making the call," Lando assured him. They set up a rendezvous at a nearby planet, one where Jaina, Jason, and Danny could get out of the Merry Miner and go aboard the other ships, with Jason taking Lando's place in the Falcon's bottom gun pod, Danny going to the Jade Saber with Jaina and Mara, and Luke going back in the Jade Saber's hold, prepping his X-Wing for the coming fight. It took a while for the lumbering shield ships to get there from their docks at Destrillion. The fleet that had come out to run guard for the ships was nowhere near as large as Luke and the others had hoped. Although Kip Duran had returned with a large squadron of starfighters, none of the Ranger gunships had joined his force, their commanders opting to wait for more New Republic firepower to arrive. Those commanders were in error, Luke knew, for as he considered the level of the route at the Helska system, the coordination of the enemy force, and the sheer power of the energy field protecting the planet itself, he understood that the New Republic would never rally enough of an armada to win out there. And likely, those Ranger gunships and the others who opted to remain at Destrillion would see more fighting from the Yuuzhan Vong gone on the offensive than those with Luke trying to surprise the planetary base. Still, he considered retreating back to Debrillion with his makeshift fleet, digging in their heels there, and trying to hold out long enough for battlecruisers and star destroyers to arrive. Though, if they came in scattershot, he realized, they would run the risk of being picked off one by one by the Yuuzhan Vong force. Perhaps they should try their cooling plan with the entire fleet, or as much of the fleet as the counselors would send assembled. But there was the rub. For Luke understood, above all else, that paralyzing, bureaucratic, self-serving council, and could hardly count on them acting prudently and correctly. Even with the disappointments, then, Luke knew that they had to press on, and quickly. The aliens had not been caught by surprise with the first assault, and without any element of surprise this time, the plan had little chance of working. They came in hot on the very edge of disaster, plotting coordinates and speeds that brought them out of hyperspace practically as a singular unit and right near the fourth planet of the Helska system. So close, in fact, that a pair of ships, the one cruiser that had joined the fleet and a starfighter, slammed right into that planet, so close together that another pair of starfighters clipped wings and went spinning and exploding away, one of them taking out a third in the process. Luke, who had ordered the dangerous jump, could only wince at the losses, and at the notion that they were acceptable losses, for this ragtag fleet could not have done it any other way. For now, suddenly, and before any Yuuzhan Vong had risen against them, they were already moving into place, the six great umbrella-shaped shield ships falling into orbit around the ice planet and decreasing that orbit with each rotation. At first, the pilots of those shield ships reported little energy, but then, suddenly, as if the war coordinator had simply flipped a switch, each of the pilots cried out that the energy readings on their honeycombed hulls had suddenly soared. The Yamask had awoken to the threat. And the coral skipper swarm rose up, not nearly as large as the one that had previously countered the fleet, for Luke's hope that many would be out on the hunt proved well-founded. "Cover for the shield ships," Luke called through all channels. "Give them the time they need." He left it at that, not adding that neither he nor Anakin, who had originally suggested this, nor any of Lando's scientists who had signed on to the idea, had any notion of how long that might be. Luke's X-Wing led the Falcon and the Jade Saber into position, protecting one of the shield ships as it worked to deflect the energy back at the planet, while the other fighters similarly went to their positions, some holding defensive arrays while others, using decoy as defense, charged the coral skippers, then vectored away, bringing pursuit after them and thus away from the shield ships. That would be Luke's tactic as well, as soon as he had the other two ships in place, only he intended to take it to a higher level, intended to dive right down into that atmosphere, turbulence, energy, and all, bringing as many coral skippers as possible to the defense of their immediate home. Prefect Agara rushed to join with the Yamask when word sounded of a second attack. At first, the prefect feared that the first attack might have been a ruse, and that this second fleet would prove much larger and stronger, despite all the indications and reports that there were no mighty enemy ships remaining in this region of the galaxy. Then the Yamask communicated to him the truth of the attackers, though, that this force was minuscule compared to the previous one, and that the only notable additions were the giant shield ships, vessels the fleet attacking Destrillion had inspected and, after determining that they were not military, had ignored. D'Gara was at a loss. Why would they come back? The only logical answer seemed to be tied to the escape of the prisoner Danny Quee. Was this a rescue mission? Was Danny Quee then still on the planet? Was this entire attack merely a ruse to allow the young woman some cover as she tried to get off planet? And why the giant shield ships? The Yamask held a theory about that. The enemy was going to try to use these ships to defeat the energy field about the planet, perhaps to turn the energy back on the planet in the hopes of defeating the Dovin Basal gravity wells or the tracking of the surface cannons. The war coordinator was not worried, for despite the proximity of the great umbrella-like ships and the fact that they were reflecting energy back at the planet, it could still feel the consciousness of the coral skippers, could still guide the battle. Prefect Dagara's fears went away in the face of the confidence of the war coordinator. In addition, the Yamask sent out the call to the nearest of those coral skipper squadrons that had already departed the system, out hunting. Even without their return, the war coordinator estimated that the enemy fleet would be repulsed in short order, or utterly destroyed if they stayed in the region even briefly. The biggest danger, then, seemed to be that Danny Quee might find some way to get off planet. That would be unfortunate, Prefect Dagara felt, for he had an affinity for the woman and wanted to study her further. But it really made very little difference. The enemy, in desperation, apparently refusing to admit the truth of their previous routing, had returned, and the outcome this time seemed even more assured. Thus, when reports that a lone starfighter, an X-Wing class, had broken into atmosphere and was running fast and strong low to the planet, Prefect Dagara ordered a huge portion of his coral skippers to take it out and, in the process, to conduct a search of the surface for the escaped prisoner. Maybe they could win again, and he could keep Danny. Luke's hull sensors and R2-D2 in back indicated that the temperature had begun to drop. Not dramatically, but noticeably. The thin air around him was tingling, alive with energy. The Yamask's own assault combined with the reflective power of the ever-lower shield ships. A tremendous fog was coming up from the icy surface of the planet as the energy altered the state of the matter. And, to the heightening of Luke's optimism, that fog was dissipating almost as fast as it was rising, a mounting cycle of evaporation. Also, the fog gave him some cover, which he needed. For all of his flying skills, Luke was into it thickly already with a host of coral skippers, the craft spinning and attacking from many angles all at once, acting as a singular opponent. He didn't even worry about his laser cannons or his torpedoes. His tactics here were purely evasive, ducking and then rising suddenly in a tight loop, then plunging down the back side of that loop into the fog. Most of his instruments were useless now, caught in the web of pure energy, and so he was flying purely on sight and on instinct, falling to the force, the one great sensor the energy power of the Yamask couldn't seem to fully intercept. flying in the opaque fog, feeling the mounting cold, and hearing R2-D2 chattering out a host of undecipherable beeps and whistles, Luke cut fast to the side, narrowly avoiding a collision with one coral skipper, then dived down halfway through that snap turn. Then, knowing the planet was rushing up to squash him, Luke Skywalker pulled for all his life, tightening the turn, hoping he could level off and come around before plunging full speed into the ice. Jaina felt the adrenaline pumping as the Jade Saber got into it hot and heavy with the coral skippers. She was piloting, with Mara handling the main guns, and Danny Quee trying to help out wherever she could. Jaina had to use conventional methods rather than the Force to coordinate her flying with that of her escort ship, the Millennium Falcon, for her father was piloting that one. But Han was a great pilot, and Jaina had never before appreciated just how great. He and the Falcon took the point position, with the Jade Saber running cover for him, and it seemed to Jaina that every turn, every dip, and every rise Han executed put yet another coral skipper into the gun sights of either Jason at the bottom gun pod or Anakin thundering away up top. Even with all of that wondrous flying, though, the Falcon was overmatched, with too many coral skippers buzzing about. Now Han had to use his speed and trust that Jaina would keep up with the even faster Jade Saber to stay ahead of the coral skippers to keep them chasing him around and leaving the shield ship alone. And they seemed to be doing that, Jaina noted, with this one and with all the shield ships, as if they didn't understand the potential danger. Given that level of detachment, she went through a brief moment of doubt, wondering if the plan had any chance at all. If the energy would be enough, if the evaporation would be enough, and if it would even matter to the volcano-warmed water in any case. No time to ponder, though, for as the Falcon broke off, the Jade Saber found herself fully engaged. Now it was Jaina's turn to show her stuff, and the young pilot went at the task full ahead. She cut a barrel roll, coming out right in the path of a coral skipper, and Mara let the guns fly, blasting the thing apart. Jaina cut a turn inside the explosion, bringing her about 30 degrees and into another exchange. This time the coral skipper got off a couple of shots, but the Jade Saber's shields handled the hits, and the return fire overwhelmed the smaller craft. Another turn, another shot. A dive and sudden climb, another shot. A snap roll, putting them right in line with another approaching craft, and nothing. Jaina took the missile hits, snap turning to the side, cutting back onto the course of the Millennium Falcon, which had sped around the far side of the shield ship. "Why didn't you take him?" she asked Mara. And when there came no response, Jaina glanced to the side. Mara was slumped in her seat, her head lolling to the side. The shock stunned Jaina. She dived over the woman, screaming, "Aunt Mara!" But the situation was too hot for such inattention to the controls. And so they got hit again and again, and by the time Jaina could get back to the controls and try to straighten the Jade Saber out, her shields were nearly gone, and one drive was sputtering, and one bank of attitude jets was shut down, and the planet was coming up fast. Jaina fought with all her strength. Behind her, Danny rushed onto the bridge, asking what she could do to help. The Jade Saber tumbled down, out of control. Luke pulled with all his strength and cried out for R2-D2 to help him. The droid's response came back sluggish and undecipherable, though, for R2-D2, outside of the protective canopy, was too cold. Luke closed his eyes, continuing to pull but expecting to slam into the planet at any second. The nose came around, slowly, slowly, and back to horizontal, and the X-wing shot along, skimming the surface. But with the deadly ice only a couple of feet below him, Luke could not yet breathe easier. He fired his repulsor coils just to get some lift, then angled up, zooming out of the fog, back into the swarm of coral skippers. Again, he didn't bother to fire off his lasers, just wriggled and spun, weaving his way through the tangle. Then he was out of the group, though many had turned on his tail to give chase. Luke sensed that it was growing colder, that the temperature was dropping faster and faster, though without his sensors he couldn't begin to measure the actual rate or begin to guess the bottom end of that drop or the final effect. He could only hope. And then he saw the Jade Saber spinning down, breaching the atmosphere and dropping out of control, and his heart sank. Han and Leia brought the Falcon screaming around the edge of the shield ship, guns blazing. and Blazing 2 was the converse side of that shield ship, facing the planet, glowing with radiated energy. Before they could begin to comment on that, though, another sight caught their attention and held it fast, dropping their hearts and their hopes. The Jade Saber tumbling, disappearing into the atmosphere. And there was nothing, nothing at all that they could do for her, for Mara and Danny, for their daughter. Luke throttled her up to full, estimating an intercept course for the falling ship. He saw her try to straighten, saw one engine straining against the fall, and knew that someone at least was still at the controls. But he knew, too, that whoever that was, the effort would be in vain, for that one drive didn't have the power to break this momentum in time, unless... Luke pushed his X-wing out to full, angling at an intercept course right below the falling ship. Then he flipped his X-wing over, coming through in a rush, and just as he passed under the Jade Saber, just before the two ships collided, he fired off one of his repulsor coils, sending a jolt of propulsion at the underside of that falling ship. With great satisfaction, Luke spun his ship back over and saw the Jade Saber climbing again, back off planet. But the maneuver had cost him altitude and put his momentum, once again, downward. He was confident that he could level off and break the dive, but the situation had changed suddenly, for the atmosphere about him had changed. The fog was burning away, some evaporating, some just coagulating into ice crystals, hanging in the air like flak. And while Luke did clip some of those icicles, crunching through the maze, many others shrank so fast that they seemed to be just withering away to nothingness. They had reached critical point. The evaporation had taken on a life of its own and at a frightening speed. More and more coral skippers appeared on the scene, some climbing up from the planet, others, many others, vectoring in, returning to the call of the Yamisk. Han, Leia, and Lando's relief at seeing the Jade Saber climbing off-planet again went away in the blink of an eye as a gigantic shield ship exploded. All the frequencies jammed with cries from the escorting starfighters and cruisers, screams that shields were gone, calls for help. Another glittering explosion filled the Falcon's view screen, a cruiser blasted apart, and then another, smaller, as a starfighter got cut to pieces. "What's taking them so long?" Han growled, aiming his frustration at Lando. Lando held up his hands helplessly. "I don't even know what we're trying to do," he insisted. "3PO, you got any answers?" Leia started to ask, but she ended with a scream, and Han yelled, "Left!" as a group of coral skippers rose up before them, suddenly firing away. The top cannons thundered a response, and Jason, in the lower pod, got one and then another. But there were too many, and they were flying too well, crossing each other's trails with such precision and coordination that the Falcon's gunners couldn't find many open shots. Han winced as the Falcon jolted from hit after hit. "Come on," he growled at his console when the shields went away momentarily and the lights blinked. Another shield ship, this one on the back side of the planet from the Falcon, exploded. "We should break off," Lando remarked. "We can't," Leia retorted sharply. "This is our chance." A third shield ship went away, and that chance seemed a longer shot by far at that moment. But then a pair of coral skippers, in opposing spins before the Falcon, came together with a devastating explosion. "Nice shot," Han called. "I didn't," Anakin replied. "Me neither," Jason said. Han and Leia looked at each other, then at Lando. Another pair of coral skippers nicked in a close cross, both spinning off wildly. To one side, Anakin blasted apart one enemy fighter and then another, and Jason got one on the other flank. The calls from the other ships filling the channels seemed to reflect similar sudden successes. "It's working," Leia breathed. "We're still outnumbered," Han reminded, and as a poignant exclamation point to his remark, a fourth shield ship blew apart. Han put the Falcon up on end, cannons blazing as it zoomed through a host of coral skippers. "Turn her back," Anakin called. "We can get every one of them before they get near our shield ship." But none of the three in the cockpit were even listening, nor was Jason, who had stopped shooting. They all just stared ahead at the planet. The fog around the planet lifted, the view of the icy world becoming more and more clear, until within a span of seconds there was not a wisp of vapor in its atmosphere. Han's breath came back to him, and Leia gasped in delight as a familiar form grew before them, the jade saber breaking out. Before they could even begin to call out to Jaina, though, the planet seemed to grow fuzzy and distorted, as if they were looking at it through a glass globe. "The Mezzocanley wave," Anakin squealed. "The fourth state of matter. It's got to be freezing below it. The water's got to be solidifying, at least."
"That's why these guys can't coordinate their attack anymore," Jason added. "They're war coordinators in a deep freeze."
Indeed, many of the Coral skippers, confused perhaps, had broken from the battle and were zooming back toward the planet, presumably to protect their base. And as Han and the others watched, the planet's rotation slowed and slowed even more.
"Unbelievable," Han muttered.
"It won't last for long," Jason explained. "The energy's gone, so the evaporation's done."
"And what happens when the planet starts up again?" Han asked ominously.
"Well, with the expansion created by the ice," Jason began, and that was enough for Han, who got a typically bad feeling about this.
"Luke," Leia whispered breathlessly.
"Get out of here! Get out of here!" Han cried through all channels. "Full retreat!"
And despite Leia's continuing plea for her missing brother, Han brought the Falcon screaming around, pointed her nose away from the fourth planet, which was beginning to rotate faster again, and punched the throttle, slowing only long enough for the jade saber to come zooming by. It hit Han then, and hard. The reality of what he was doing, of his retreat, so much like the retreat Anakin had pulled on Cernpadal, leaving Chewie behind. He almost turned the Falcon back around, plunging toward the planet in a desperate search for Luke. Almost. But he could not. If he had been alone, then there would have been no hesitation, but he was not alone, was responsible for more lives than his own, as Anakin had been. All the rest of the fleet broke off, too, turning tail and running, with the shield ship tug pilots releasing their lumbering shields and running off for all their lives. Great quakes rocked the surface of the planet. A chasm appeared, a long canal exploding and running with supersonic speed from pole to pole. And then the whole planet blew, a shattering, sparkling explosion of ice crystals, spinning out, catching the Helsken sun's rays in a myriad of sparkles and colors. Out of that widening cloud came a single black speck, a single X-wing running with all speed, surfing on the very edge of an overpowering wave.